Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. President Donald Trump continues to demand to know the identity of the whistleblower who submitted that report of urgent concern. Here's the president just yesterday.
Mr. President, do you now know who the whistleblower is, sir?
Well, we're trying to find out about a whistleblower. When you have a whistleblower that reports things that were incorrect.
That's the president yesterday. He has also previously referred to people who may have given the whistleblower information as spies. So how is this resonating within the intelligence community? Well, Joel Brenner joins us now. He served as Inspector General for the National Security Agency from 2002 to 2006. He was also head of the U.S. counterintelligence under the Director of National Intelligence from 2006 to 2009. So he served in both capacities in the administration of President George W. Bush. He's currently a senior research fellow at MIT's Center for International Studies. Joel Brenner, it's good to have you in the studio.
It's nice to be back.
So first of all, let me just ask you about what you make of the president's repeated demands to unmask the whistleblower.
It's another example of the president's disregard for not only basic decency, but the norms that people across the political spectrum used to observe, and that ensured the stability of the country.
Hmm. Did you handle whistleblower complaints during your time as the NSA IG?
Oh, certainly I did. And we had a hotline in our office that we could take complaints anonymously. We could also take complaints from people who wanted to identify themselves, and we were very careful to protect their identity.
Mm. So what effect do you think the president's demands to unmask the whistleblower might be having within the intelligence community?
I think everybody in the intelligence community is extremely nervous. The president's been attacking the community explicitly, and the president's now attacking the norms by which the Congress and the intelligence community have agreed that there ought to be a way to report wrongdoing. Hmm. This is dangerous. The president's MO is to create as much chaos and confusion on all fronts as he can. That's what he's doing here.
Given your experience, both as former Inspector General of the NSA and you were head of U.S. counterintelligence, under the office of the Director of National Intelligence. I mean, what concerns you most about this moment right now?
Again, it has to do with the basic trust that people used to have in American institutions. And even as that trust diminished significantly during my lifetime, there were still basic norms that people observed, ways that they behaved. This is going to make whistleblowers more reluctant to come forward. I'm talking about whistleblowers who are not merely cranky and complaining about not getting promoted and stuff. We saw plenty of that, too. But people who really saw something that they thought that really looked wrong. Mm. And this especially so since the president's now saying such nasty things about this person who everybody else says in a position to know is following the rules that one fears for that person's safety. Mm-hmm. And he's said things to, you know, we're going to start a civil war and this man ought to be dealt with as a traitor. And you know what we used to do with traitors, mm-hmm. which is, you know, hang them or shoot them. I mean, this is so beyond the pale, and of course people are extremely nervous about it.
Mm. Well, let's take a step back here for a second. How do you judge the handling of the complaint so far? Has the handling of the complaint by the intelligence community, do you think it's been by the book?
By the book was the phrase I was going to use before you said it. Mr. Atkinson, who's the IG of the ODNI and who used to be a Justice Department official and whom I've dealt with and always found to be a very capable man and a straight shooter, handled this thing as he's supposed to. He not only took it and passed it on, he did his own investigation, which helped him, as he says yesterday, said yesterday, to corroborate much of what the whistleblower had to say. And, of course, the whistleblower doesn't necessarily produce admissible evidence for a court. He produces leads for an investigation, which is what one wants. He then passed it on, as he was supposed to do under the statute, to his acting director, who was prepared to send it to the Hill. So the intelligence community has behaved perfectly. The bad behavior has come after that.
So the acting director of National Intelligence, Joseph McGuire, you say he was prepared to send it to the Hill? Because that seems to be a point of contention between McGuire and members of Congress.
Well, I think attacking McGuire is both a political mistake and unfair. This is an extraordinary situation involving the president of the United States. I don't believe there has been – I'm confident there's never been a previous – example of the president's being involved in a whistleblower attack. So, and it involved a conversation with a foreign leader, which on its face was a privileged conversation. There has to be a way for the White House, for a White House, for a president, forget about whatever you may think about Trump, to assert that privilege.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that McGuire was behaving incorrectly by telling the White House that here's a situation, assert the privilege. I think if he were going to criticize him at all, and I say if, that you would say maybe he didn't take 2 weeks for the White House to assert a privilege. He might have given them a deadline. But I might have done that. But I can't say I would have done that without being in his shoes and understanding all the situation.
Okay, so I want to walk folks through this a little bit just to lay out some of the facts to help us understand what you're saying. Because Michael Atkinson, Inspector General, as you said, to the intelligence community, he wrote this August 26th letter to Acting Director Joseph McGuire. Right. And that's been made public here. So I was just looking at it yesterday. And it's in this letter that Atkinson says that in his judgment, alleged conduct by a U.S. public official to seek foreign assistance to interfere in a federal election would constitute a serious problem or a flagrant abuse. And then the letter goes on to say that the law requires that determination of credibility, right, of the whistleblower's complaint, and that that determination be made 14 calendar days from the receipt of the complaint, which is what Atkinson and his staff proceeded to do, right?
Correct.
And he determined that the complaint appeared reported an urgent concern. That's a very key phrase here, and appears credible. And then the letter closed by saying that the DNI had 7 calendar days upon receipt of this particular letter from the Inspector General to forward it to congressional committees. Now, that would have been September 2nd, but McGuire didn't provide the complaint to Congress until the 26th of September, right? Or sorry, the 25th of September, because the Justice Department, the Office of Legal Counsel there, and McGuire had determined that it wasn't of urgent concern?
McGuire did not determine that. OLC, the Office of Legal Counsel. Office of Legal Counsel, your listeners ought to know, are the lawyers' lawyers in the Justice Department. They say what the law is from the executive branch's point of view. And what they say is law within the executive branch. So McGuire didn't make that determination.
Okay.
And so he was faced with a situation where he has a certain amount of time that if it's in this category, then he shall provide it to the Congress within a certain number of days. But the OLC is telling him it's not within that category. Now, it's clear after that happened, clear in my judgment, that McGuire then played a pretty hard game inside. And at some point, he had to be playing a tough game because the White House walked backwards on what it was willing to do. Now, McGuire says he didn't offer to resign, as the Post reported, but he had to be advocating for this to happen. And it eventually did happen. And I think one ought to, before criticizing McGuire for taking this time, you got to remember again, this is an extraordinary situation. The Congress got what it wanted. It took a few weeks longer to get it. But McGuire has steered his ship through a very narrow channel without scraping the bottom.
Right. Well, I just want to play a little moment from McGuire's testimony before the House Intelligence Committee, where he responded to questions about why the whistleblower's complaint took more than 7 days to get to Congress. And here is what McGuire said.
That was working while I was endeavoring to get the executive privilege concerns addressed so that it can then be forwarded. It was not stonewalling. I didn't receive direction from anybody. I was just trying to work through the process and the law the way it is written. I have to comply with the way the law is, not the way some people would like it to be.
That's the acting director of National Intelligence, Joseph McGuire. But Joel Brenner, let me ask you, I mean, in your capacity with your experiences having been Inspector General for the NSA, do you think that the Office of Legal Counsel in the Justice Department was right or wrong in its determination that this wasn't a matter of urgent concern?
Well, I think the reason they reached that conclusion, and I don't agree with the conclusion, but it's a very reasoned and plausible conclusion. And it's based on the fact that the purpose of the ICIG Act is to monitor behavior within the intelligence community. And this behavior that's complained about is not within the intelligence community.
And that's one of the chief criticisms coming from the GOP.
Well, that's criticism or not, that's a fact. And that's not a crazy view of the statute by any means. Now, I took the other view because I think the Inspector General has two responsibilities under the statute, whatever its purpose is. You'll read the plain words of the statute. One is to investigate certain things within his purview, and the other is to report certain things that come to his attention, regardless of whether he investigated them or not. And I think that under that language, the obligation to report, that the statute did cover cover this. But as I say, that was a difference of view. I might have said in McGuire's place, look, White House, it doesn't take this long to determine whether you're going to assert executive privilege over a conversation with a foreign leader. Everybody knows you could assert that privilege if you want to. You have 24 hours. If I don't have an assertion of privilege in writing on my desk tomorrow at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm going to the Hill. Now, I don't think that's McGuire's style. And you've got to remember that he has got what he wanted, taking a little more time than I think it should have taken, taking a couple of weeks longer than it should have taken. But the Hill got what it wanted. What it hasn't achieved is to have legal protection for the whistleblower, because although McGuire has pledged that his organization will protect that whistleblower, it is only if the act applies that he's entitled to that protection legally.
I see. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Joel Brenner, I also read in Atkinson's letter to acting DNI McGuire that that Atkinson writes that whistleblowers can make complaints on urgent concerns relating to flagrant abuse of violation of law or executive order, the operation of an intelligence activity, or involving classified information. And that made me think about, how over the past several days we've been having this news that there may be not just the transcript, the rough transcript of the Ukrainian call on these special, you know, highly secret servers in the White House, but possibly other information that White House lawyers have advised White House staff to put on, you know, those other servers, those, I guess, code word only servers. How outside of the normal operations is that?
Oh, out of the normal operations of the intelligence community, it's just totally. I can't say nobody's ever done it, but it is not according to Hoyle. You put things in a. Let me explain first what code word means. There are three classifications only under our law: confidential, secret, top secret. You don't go higher than that. But then we have certain horizontal classifications that have to do with things that are put in compartments, or in Defense Department called special access programs. That's what this is talking about. This server was to hold information that was compartmented or sapped, as they say. This information was not. It was clearly not appropriate to put this information there. Now, the president does have the power to classify things however he wants, which means his behavior and the ordinary IC person's behavior are not the same thing. But I would say, remind people that if you do a lawful act for an unlawful purpose in the course of conspiring to cover up illegal behavior, which I think is demonstrated in the transcript itself, then that becomes illegal. That's an act in furtherance of conspiracy. And I think that's what was going on here.
Are you more than a little gobsmacked that White House lawyers are reported to have advised White House staff to do this?
Yes. You know, when things go wrong, you always want to say, where were the lawyers? And if this whistleblower complaint pans out in all respects, it appears that the lawyers were actually guiding the cover-up of this information. And I think if that is true, that they've got problems under criminal law and their license to practice law are going to be challenged at some point as well.
We have just a minute to go, Joel Brenner. I want to ask you two last quick questions here. First of all, there has been some confusion in recent days about whether or not a whistleblower has to have firsthand information in a complaint. Do they?
No. No, and why would you want that to be the case? An investigator, whether it's an investigative journalist or a prosecutor or an inspector general, wants leads. You start with leads. You don't start with admissible evidence for in a courtroom, which is what firsthand information is, so it's not hearsay. You want to get information that's credible that will then guide an investigation to produce firsthand information.
Which is what the inspector general did.
Which is what he did. And so this is a complete red herring. It's not only not the case, but you wouldn't want it to be the case.
Well, Joel Brenner is former inspector general for the NSA. He served in that position between 2002 to 2006. And then from 2006 to 2009, he was head of U.S. counterintelligence under the director of national intelligence. And he is now a senior research fellow at MIT's Center for International Studies. Joel Brenner, thanks as always.
You're most welcome.
And listeners, before we go today, I want to just make a quick note on a special upcoming broadcast of the show. We're hitting the road. I'll be in Columbia, South Carolina for a special On Point live show this Thursday. We'll talk with community leaders, journalists, and voters about 2020. South Carolina is going to play a very important role in the election cycle. It's the site of the first Democratic primary in the South, so we have a request for you. Go to onpointradio.org and tell us more about what you want us to cover while we're there. Again, let us know at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.